Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy sports and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics.
It's Mr. FSP, riding solo for the time being. It is the Saturday edition of Fantasy Sports and Politics. We have a different type of show in store for you. As you know, if you're a listener, a continuous listener of this program, we normally do mainly sports on this show, and sometimes we get into the politics of sports. But on today, we're going to do a little college sports and a lot more real politics as far as the United States government goes. So it's going to be a different type of show. Just letting you know, we're going to get into the RNC, which is the Republican National Convention. We're going to talk about the Democratic National Convention coming up, how that actually impacts your sporting weekend, and some other things. We're going to get an overview of Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan's platforms, so to speak. With me right now, and just calling in, as usual, is the ATM, always trying to take somebody's money, Jerry Taylor. What's going on, Pippen?
Nothing much, man. Just living my life and always taking money.
Always taking money. That's what it is.
ATM. Always taking money.
Whatever.
With the master plan in effect.
All right. Well, we're supposed to have our buddy Black up in the building. To give us our college preview. I know he's got a lot of stuff going on, so I don't think he's going to make it in. But what I do have is some information for those that are the college football fanatic. This is a spoiler alert, just letting you know. There's a game, or there was a game going on in Ireland between Notre Dame and Navy. Jerry, off the top of your head, who do you think, or do you know the answer to this question? Who do you think won that game?
I know the answer.
Oh, you already know the answer?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know the exact score, but I know it was at least a 20-point win. So.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame went out and thwarted the Navy ship. I mean, just keep it real. It was like a 31-10 or 7 victory.
Yes.
It was ridiculous. Needless to say, they have the home field advantage. Luckily, the Irish, you're in Ireland. It's different. But it doesn't matter because both teams were there long enough to get climatized and da-da-da-da-da. You know, I don't know if the kids just got overwhelmed or Navy took a step back or Notre Dame is finally realizing their potential, because the last three times Notre Dame has faced Navy, they've lost.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like wow type of losing to them.
Well, sooner or later, a squirrel does have to find a nut. So, I mean, I understand that there are trends in college football, just like they're in a lot of other sports. But with good coaching and the right year when there's a transition maybe in Navy and an upward trend maybe in Notre Dame, you get a result of a 21 point loss that Navy gets. So
okay, well, I wanted to get another viewpoint on another game and the implication of that game, and is it the quarterback effect? I'm talking about Michigan State versus Boise State. Boise State lost that game, and it was a close game. It was a close game, but it did not look like a Chris Peterson-type team that showed up. You know, Boise State, their quarterback, Bigwick or something like that, he was definitely not Kellen Clemens-like. He was very, I don't know, I want to say erratic. The defense looked good, but the offense looked out of sorts, and they ended up losing to Michigan State.
Well,
and, you know,
The first year, I wouldn't say first. Well, it is the first year quarterback starting for this year, and their star running back is in the NFL. So there's two key positions that they're rebuilding. Plus the fact is, if I'm not mistaken, they lost both their wide receivers to the NFL.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's four key positions on the offense. That team has to make up. I don't know if they. I'm not too up on Boise State's team, but to take a hit on four key positions like that, you gotta expect the first game to possibly take a step back, before they can take a step forward to evaluate what they actually have in talent. And Michigan State, they probably didn't lose as many starters on defense or offense. And I don't know what the score was. You can tell, enlighten me what the score was.
I believe it was 20-17 or something like that.
Okay, so I imagine Boise State's not that far off, but to take a hit on four key positions like that, And not miss a beat, I don't know about that. Hey, Vic,
okay.
I got an issue with one of my computers. I got to call you back, all right?
It's not a problem. I got my cousin on the line from the 240.
Okay. Okay.
Mr.
I'll talk to you later.
Moore, right. How you doing, Mr. Moore?
What's up, sir? What you eat y'all on here yakking about? Yakking about college football? I can go back
to
sleep for a minute.
Whatever. We're going to get to the politics. We're going to get to the politics, okay? But, yes, we're talking about college football and the implications of a few games that have taken place. Like right now, Penn State is playing Ohio, University of Ohio. And and it was a big turnout yesterday for their pep rally, and Penn State chose not to honor or speak about Joe Paterno, even though they're celebrating their 50 years of greatness. Or 80 years of greatness, whatever it is that they're doing, they chose not to touch the Joe Paterno situation. What do you think about that?
I think that was a good move by them, not to even say anything about it. Just try to show their pride in Penn State or what have you. But I think that they're going. I mean, I think with them rallying around each other and stuff like that. I think that's okay. But I got mixed. I still got mixed feelings about that whole Joe Paterno thing. For real, because I think really Penn State need to be shut down. For real.
Well,
that's why I'm asking.
That's why I'm asking the question about it, because a lot of folks feel like you do. That aren't in Happy Valley. They feel as though that. The punishment that they received was good, but the fact they're still on TV, the fact that they're, able to do so many different things, it bothers a lot of people,
Yeah.
And the fact that they're not even talking about Joe Paterno at all, is like a slap in the face to the paternal family.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much a slap in the face. The reason why I think it should go further on Penn State, because you know the real folks that control this whole thing, that cover this whole thing, we still haven't gotten them. So if we're not gonna get them, we might as well just shut the whole joint down. You know, that's how I feel about it.
Well, you know, 90% of the kids or the athletes on the football team return, knowing the situation. That speaks to their credit. And the other 10%, they went off to different universities to try to make a name for themselves and be successful and win a national championship. Talking about mainly in reference to the running back that went to USC.
He had a little running back?
Yeah, good player, very good player. He's going to get some time. He's not going to be the starter now. But USC has been said to be in the lead for the national championship, to win the national championship. Even though LSU's ranked number one and Alabama's ranked number two, USC, with all of its talent, and Barkley at quarterback, it seems to be the number one prospect for winning it all. I think they'll play Alabama in the national championship game, and then you'll get the type of game that everybody wanted to see last year. But that's a different story. We'll talk about that later. But we're on Alabama. And Alabama is about to face Michigan. Now, here's the thing about it. This is supposed to be a very, very big game. First game of the season for both teams. Make or break for both teams, really. First game of the season. And Brady Hoke, the coach of the Michigan Wolverines, had to do a moral thing, since we're talking about morality and we're talking about Penn State. He suspended his starting tailback, his starting defensive end, and his starting safety, I believe, for this game. The biggest game of their season so far, he suspends them. Here's some information on those suspended players.
This is life lessons, you know, and I think I know why I got into coaching, and that was to, help mold young men, and I think that's what we do. And so if we saved one of those guys by making a decision that's going to be best for Michigan in the program, then hopefully we've done the right thing, and I know we have.
So we go from talking about Joe Paterno and Penn State and not doing the right thing to a coach that knows that his team could possibly really beat the defending national champions, but takes away three of their key components. The running back was suspended because of a alleged laptop stealing. Yes, it's alleged because the young man has not been prosecuted or anything like that, but the team suspended him based on the information they have, and which leads you to say that he did it, but it's still under investigation. So it's not like you can just say this kid did it. I'm not trying to get hit for a slander or a libel, so I have to throw alleged in there. But, this kid gets suspended. Now, he was going to be the big balance for Michigan as Denard Robinson ran wild and possibly threw wild. Alabama, that is their weakness, a running quarterback. Their safety is good, but their linebackers have to follow that quarterback. If Michigan's running back, starting running back, were in the game and they ran the option, it would be very, very, very difficult for Alabama, losing five starters from last year on the defensive side, to stay up with Robinson and the running back. Now, the guy that's taking his place was penciled in as a starter last year, but he got injured. And this other kid stepped up and took his place. So I'm going to ask you a question. What do you think about Hoke's decision to do the morally correct thing versus trying to get a victory for the University of Michigan?
While I, applaud him, for his life decisions, I don't care. I want to see, if I'm watching a game, I want to see a game, especially for this game, I don't think I would have done it. I think I would have let him play. I probably would have gave them another little ticky-tack day because it's, you know, it's a little ticky-tack. It's a little ticky-tack punishment. You know, he's going to punish him the first game, but it's going to hurt him more than it than it served the lessons for the boy, for the youngin. So, no, I'm not really feeling it because, actually, nobody wants to see Michigan play this game. Nobody. Everybody wants to see Alabama. Alabama. You know what I mean? They want to see.
I mean, I got to disagree with you because that goes back to the real prior thing. You know, Ohio State, they let him play along with the others play in the Sugar Bowl because they wanted to win the Sugar Bowl. I got it. But the morality of it is, even after they agreed, several of them agreed to come back and deal with the punishment, Pryor, who was one of those people, opted out and left the university and went to the NFL. Now, the morality of that is, am I going to teach this guy a lesson and will it sink in, or am I going to, you know, try to win this game just so I can get a better seating with the university or the football community? And I think it sets the wrong precedence to let them play. Now, you say let them play because you want to see a football game, a real football game. Denard Robson is still there. The running back that was the backup is still there. The receivers didn't get changed. The defense is what is really impacted besides the running game. I'm going to bring Jerry back in and see what he thinks about it. Hi, Jerry.
What's up?
On hold for a minute. What do you think about Hope's decision to suspend the starting running back, the lineman, linebacker, and safety?
For
the first game, Michigan's first game versus Alabama today.
Hey, if they violated team rules, then he got to lay the law down, regardless of how it's going to hurt the team. The bottom line is this: you can't let the inmates run the asylum. He's got rules that he's laid down for everybody on the team. Some thought they could absurd their rules and do something different and not get penalized for it. Well, because these guys are in skill positions that they need to try to beat Alabama, and unfortunately, he's going to have to lay the law down and said, no, you guys aren't playing, and that's the bottom line. You should have thought about that before you did what you did. So,
well, again, the running back is accused of stealing a laptop. I'm not sure exactly what the other guys are, but
I don't understand these guys. I don't understand these guys. I don't understand. Some of these guys do some of the dumb stuff that, I mean, don't they learn from other guys from other schools in past years that do some stupid stuff that if you do this, there's a strong possibility that you're going to get caught, especially if you're a high profile player. And you're gonna hurt your team. I mean, you gotta be a total knucklehead to be doing some of this stuff.
I go back to, and Michael, I don't know if you remember this, but back to the early '80s with the University of Miami, and Luther Campbell, T Live Crew, and all those other folks. I can recall ESPN 360 doing a special on them and talking about how a lot of these cats would go in and steal car stereos, and I believe Perryman, he played with Detroit as a wide receiver. He admittedly stated, yeah, I did what I had to do. I had a kid. I was hungry. I didn't have nothing. So, yeah, we put on hoods, and we went in and stole car stereos and sold them so we could have some money. And I'm like, dude, are you serious? I mean, I get it. Some of these kids, and this goes back to the pay-for-play in college, and while the Big Ten, they were a proponent of it because they don't want that type of things going on with their players. You know, give them like an extra, $2,500 stipend or whatever it is during the school year. But these kids do things like that. I'm not saying this is why the kid was accused of it or why he may or may not have done it, but they're like, I'm hungry. I'm not getting money. I want some shoes. I want this, that, and the third. Or I need this, that, and the third. And I can't get it because the NCAA says I can't get a job. or I can't accept money from friends or family members. I mean, anybody outside of my immediate family. So it becomes that type of issue. You know, I'm not agreeing with them doing it. I'm just saying I don't think it's something that, as you said, Jerry, these kids should look at and say, you know what? What if I get caught? You know, what happens to my career? What happens to my name? Will the NFL still look at me as a good athlete? The Cowboys might. They don't care if you do dumb stuff.
Look at the Honey Badger, man.
Well,
I mean, he's got a drug problem, but it's the same type of thing. I mean, you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing, and if you have the ability to take it to the next level, you're going to hurt that ability greatly, and it can cost you millions, and it can even cost you your career.
Well, see, here's the difference with him. I think he's just a good college player. I really think he's just a good college player and a good special teams person. He's like the Brandon Banks of college football. You know, I think that his cover skills are mediocre. I think his hitting ability is mediocre. He's elusive and things like that. But other than that, I don't think Mayhew is that good. Honestly, I don't think he's that good. But, you know, he is one of those players. But I want to get back on topic here because I got a little bit of time left before we get into the political side of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about Nick Saban's thought of stopping Denard Robinson now that he knows that the running back's gone.
He really scrambles and extends plays and throws the ball down the field, and that's where he's made a significant number of big plays, and that's even more challenging to the guys in the back end not to make errors and mistakes and leave somebody open or come open because they're looking in the backfield thinking he's going to run. So he's a real challenge, you know, maybe one of the most challenging quarterbacks that we face since Cam Newton.
I got a question before you go any further. What do you think of this guy's throwing ability?
Denard Robinson?
Yeah.
I think that he has to be more accurate. He has to be more accurate. However, the kid has an arm. In the NFL, he's not going to be tall enough to play. Yeah, he does Flutie this, does Flutie that. But nowadays,
how tall is he?
He's like 5'9.5", 5'10".
Yeah, somewhere around
same height as the starting quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks.
No, he's
but
shorter. He's shorter.
Yes. Wilson is closer to 6 feet than Denard Robinson is, and I think Wilson is a more cerebral quarterback than Robinson. Robinson is a very fast, elusive guy, and just like Nick Saban said, it's going to be a challenge to take this guy just like it was for Cam Newton. The only difference is you can hit this guy really hard maybe three times, and he's on the bench for a few seconds, and then Gardner comes in. I don't know if this kid's related to me or not, Mike, but...
I kind of doubt it.
Well...
Yeah, I doubt it.
Screw both of y'all. Anyway, his name is Devin Gardner, and he is more of the prototypical height quarterback, but he makes bad decisions with the ball. So that's his problem. Maybe he's fixed that. But Gardner is like 6'2", something like that, and he has a good arm, but he makes bad decisions. But the comparison to Cam Newton that Nick Saban made was that he's elusive, he can get away, he can break the field that they have and still throw the ball down the field. So his arm strength is good. I just think he relies too much on that arm strength to power him through. Earlier this morning on game day, they were saying how the typical quarterback takes a 7-step drop, and that's maybe 7 yards away from the line of scrimmage. Well, Denard Robinson, his is more of 11 yards from the line of scrimmage so he can get a better field of vision. So that means you're taking 10 to 11 more yards off of a ball and giving the defensive back more time to react, unless he is elusive and escapes the pocket. So his ability to be a quarterback is better than average, but it's college level. You know, he's not a Wilson.
Uh-huh.
He's not a
okay.
Wilson. Wilson is a... He's extraordinary, very smart thinker, and he can run and throw, but he's
so
is
he,
more as being a passer.
So is he like Charlie Ward? Is he like a Charlie Ward type?
Yeah.
I was,
I would say that, and the fact is, I don't think too much of this guy. He's more of a runner than a passer. I don't think he's as accurate as he can be. And I think he relies on his legs too much. I don't know. I mean, I think Alabama is definitely going to expose this guy big time.
Well, I think he's going to expose Alabama's defense. They lost. They're the ones that lost five starting defenders, and they already had problems with a mobile quarterback. So I think it's going to be they're favored to win by, I believe, 8 or 20, something like that. I think they're favored to win by 20 because Michigan lost their starting running back, the safety and the linebacker and all those guys. It was like an 8 or 10 point favorite, but now it's double. Last I checked, the game's on tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so we'll see what the line is by that time. But I think with Boise State losing, because I want to jump from all around here, they're not going to get back in the top 25 in the next 2 or 3 years because that quarterback is not as good as Clemens. And their running game is nowhere. If Doug Martin stayed, maybe. But the running back they have is not like Doug Martin. He's more of a scat back type dude. He's not somebody who can pound down the middle and stuff like that. And the passing game isn't that great. So Boise State is out of the picture. There will be no BCS busters from there. Alabama and USC are my picks for the national championship game.
Well, what else is new? You always pick an Alabama. I mean,
Crimson Tide, baby.
Yeah.
A Crimson Tider.
Yeah.
So it is
what it is. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Whatever. Honestly, I think they're that good. Now they got a tough schedule. But we'll see what happens. But what I want to do right now is open up the phone lines because we're about to get into some serious stuff. And I know Mac may or may not be able to call in. I want to have a continuation of yesterday's show. No Chaser here on Blog Talk Radio. If you go to www.blogtalkradio.com/BICHBK, look up No Chaser with Mac Williams and Jerry Taylor, and you'll see that yesterday's episode was highly, highly intense. Highly intense.
Yeah,
I just
took a back seat and let y'all go because y'all were going.
Well, I listened to it again this morning, and I was like, wow. I thought they were going to fight for a second.
Y'all were going. I just sat back and just listened because there was too many voices being talked at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
So I
really thought y'all were going to fight, but it is what it is. Y'all can't fight over the phone. Y'all can push buttons. Like,
nah, I can't get him to fight, you know what I'm saying? I don't want him to fight because he won't have a conversation no more. You know, you heard him talking about he ain't going to talk about it no more to have the election. See, I done scared him. Got back up a little bit.
Nah, he said he wasn't going to do that anymore a while ago, but I kind of goaded him into it when we were texting back and forth.
Because I've been talking to Mac before, and he told me he wasn't going to talk about it anymore.
Popped up on Skype.
Yeah.
Popped up on Skype.
Yeah.
Hopefully he calls in.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it wasn't you, Mike. Don't pat yourself on the back. If you guys want to get on a conversation, you can always dial 347-637-3220. Again, that number is 347-637-3220. Or you can go to our chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. It's blogtalkradio.com/BIHBK. Click on today's episode, which is Tackling Politics and College Football. We just did college football, so now we're getting to politics. We're going to talk about the RNC and the DNC, the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention. What I want to do first, because it happened first, is talk about the Republican National Convention. There were a lot of things that went on. I've got a lot of sound bites. So what I want to do first is go into these sound bites, get a quick reaction from you guys on the sound bites, and then I'm going to go into actual highlights from Mitt Romney's speech and what he outlined that he and Ryan are going to do. So first soundbite I'm going to do is Mitt Romney, in the spirit of football, says the United States of America needs a new coach, meaning head coach.
Mitt Romney says President Obama's had a lousy record as America's jobs coach. 0 and 23 million, he says.
It's time for America to see a winning season again, and we're going to bring it to them.
While Romney spoke to hundreds here in Cincinnati, his running mate Paul Ryan was in Columbus watching his Miami of Ohio Redhawks take on Ohio State. Stephen Portnoy, ABC News, Cincinnati.
So, you know, I'm not too happy about that, you know, using football references, basketball references, whatever it is, when politicians try to relate to the youth or the 24-year-old racket range, because those guys, other than President Obama, play golf all the time. They're not playing basketball. They're not playing football. I mean, Al Gore did, but he was vice president. You know, you want to talk about a new coach? All right, fine. Show me your coaching staff, because no coach does it by his lonesome. So, quick reaction from you guys on that soundbite there.
Oh, God, I got nothing. I got nothing.
I do. This guy is like a chameleon to me. He seems like he, whatever the tide is going, whatever seems like the wind is blowing, that's the way he carries himself. That's the way he gives his opinion and his speeches about. I got a real problem with this guy that he doesn't seem like he's got a backbone to me. He doesn't seem like he's got any opinion on his own. He seems like he gathers an opinion that's going to make the people feel that much better about him, and then he goes with that. Rather than stick to your convictions, stick to what your core beliefs and what you really believe in, I think this guy goes with what sounds good for the time being this week. And he may change next week. So I got a real problem with that, and I got a real problem with people that don't see that with this guy.
Right. I'm with you there. I was done with him with the whole Romney kid thing. It's just unfathomable to me that you would have a person that was a proponent for Romney kid. Hello? Can you guys hear me?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. There was a proponent for Romney kid. You know what I mean? And
right.
He introduced it to Massachusetts. And now that it's been implemented by this president, it's a big problem. You know, it's an issue. It's wrong. It's not right. It's incorrect. It's this. It's that. But it's essentially the same package.
And now he's just a total hypocrite.
He's a total hypocrite, and it really shows to me his decision making, and I have a big problem with that. Big problem with that.
I want to invite any and all conservative or middle of the road folks or undecided or independents to call in. Because I don't want to make this a witch hunt for the Republican Party. I want to hear the second side of anybody that differs from the opinion that we're giving. Again, the number is 347-637-3220, 347-637-3220, because we're going to agree on certain things. I might have to, for the sake of argument, and trust me, it's only for that, pretend to be a Romney lover, because I want to have a debate. I don't want it to just be all of us on one accord. But
right.
We may or may not. So what do you say, Jerry?
I said fine. That's fine. Whatever.
All right.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I could get over there with you. You know, and talk about some of the things that he's talking about. You know, he's really hitting hard on this economy. You know, and the Obama administration and this administration has not, you know, adequately addressed the economy. But at the same time, look, see, there I go. See, I can't even get on the other side and stay. But I can't even get on the other side and stay.
Well, I'll do it, flip flopper. I got you.
I'm trying. You know, I tried.
It's
but
okay.
You know,
I want to invite people on the show to talk about. That's why I definitely wanted Mac on.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't make it, can't make it. But there's something interesting that I wanted to bring to everybody's attention. It was an email to President Obama. Here you go.
Within minutes of the balloon drop, candidate Barack Obama emailed his contributors declaring, Governor Romney has had his night. Now the president is asking for donations for his campaign as he begins what they're calling the Road to Charlotte and his acceptance speech at the Democratic Convention in North Carolina. Ann Compton, ABC News, Washington.
And before you go on, Vic.
Yes.
We talked about this. And I'll tell you what I'm talking about. We talked about this on Skype briefly yesterday. You got an email asking for a donation, and millions of people supporters of Obama got the same type of emails because this election is going to cost big bucks, and this guy's got money to burn. And Obama needs money to be able to compete with this guy in putting out all kinds of mass media type of, for lack of a better word, propaganda to offset what the other side is doing. So this is going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight, and the lines have been drawn. Now it's up to Obama to address what's been taking place over the last 3 days. So,
and let me say this.
Go ahead.
I don't feel bad for Obama. I don't. I really don't feel sorry for him. Cause let me tell you, them boys from Chicago don't think that they are slouch, Slim. Don't even
right.
think they slouch.
No, no.
They will get dirty. They will get dirty quick.
Right.
And don't
right.
have a problem with it, and because they were talking about, you know, Obama really, you know, really understanding this stuff, and they were, you know, they were kind of pressing him about it, thinking that, you know, he would have an issue with it, but he don't.
Well, I mean, part of it is that, you know, and Max said this the other day or last night that this election or the liberals are attacking and trying to use fear to win an election. Now, I've seen a little bit of that in some of President Obama's commercials. However, I go back to the same type of tactics that were used when he was running for office, how people were trying to use fear to say, no, you don't want this guy in office because he's this, he's that, he's not American, he's this. I mean, he'll do this, he'll do that. You know, I think it's all a part of, you know, the political animal. I don't think that you want to sit there and just say it's a fear tactic and that's why I don't want him in office. I mean, that's a cop-out.
I have to disagree with you, Aaron. I saw something on that was posted by Jay early on Facebook. I don't know if you've seen it, Vic. About the dishonesty on display through the GOP. And one of the things, and we talked about this, and I said to Mac that the other side is good for saying things in code and not coming out specifically and saying it. And one of the things they came over and said, I watched this video that was from the Republican National Convention, that was questioning, and this was a code, questioning Obama's U.S. citizenship over and over again. It wasn't just one person. It was like a half a dozen of the speakers at the convention questioning Obama's U.S. citizenship, which is telling me that you better watch out. He may be a Muslim, and we got to get him out of office. So, I mean, that things like that I have a problem with. I really have a problem with because the fact is it's been 4 years. It's been 4 years, and every step of the way they question this man's U.S. citizenship. Nowhere can I ever recall in U.S. history that an American president throughout his administration has been questioned on whether he was a U.S. citizen or not.
I got you, guy. I mean, people want to use whatever type of tactic they can to get the advantage that they want. Do I agree with it? No. Is it there? Yes. How do you deal with it determines, to me, the character of the person. Because you can sit up here all day and say that I'm this, that, and the third, but I know what I am, and God knows who I am and what I am, so I really don't give a damn what you think.
Well,
but,
you have a lot of people that you got to question the character of the party. It stooped to things like this that they constantly hammer it home. And you have people that actually believe this stuff, actually believe what McHale says is propaganda. So that's what I'm talking about.
I'm about to get to one person that actually helped the Democratic Party by doing such a thing. And you guys might know him. He's an elderly gentleman. Let's hear a little bit.
I've got Mr. Obama sitting here.
Eastwood conducted a rambling conversation with an imaginary Barack Obama.
How do you handle promises that you've made?
Eastwood was critical.
Some of the people in your own party were very disappointed when you didn't close Gitmo.
Cantankerous.
What do you mean, shut up? I'm not going to shut up.
Some may wish he had.
What do you want me to tell Romney? I can't tell him to do that. He can't do that to himself.
The internet exploded with messages critical of the movie star's latest performance, but on the convention floor, critical acclaim, especially when Eastwood finished with his signature line.
Go ahead.
Jim Hill, ABC News.
So, Mr. Eastwood, I mean, if you didn't catch that part of the convention, that was the most entertaining and bizarre part.
Yeah, it was the most entertaining. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I understood the metaphor. I understood what he was attempting to do. But, you know, about 8-9 years ago, Eastwood was, you know, saying the same crap about Bush, and we all loved it. And a friend of mine on Facebook pointed something out, and I thought it was very relevant, although I disagreed slightly with her. She stated that if Eastwood did this at the Democratic National Convention, there would be no problems with anybody in Hollywood or anywhere else. The only people who have a problem with it would be Fox and conservatives. So she was like, so why is it such a big issue saying that the man's crazy and he's senile and all this other stuff now just because he did it for the Republican Party? Now, I don't know if Tiffany is Republican or Democrat or independent or whatever, but I told her, my thing was it was done in poor taste. He did, like the party said about, I'm not going to tell Ron to do that. He can't do that to himself. I mean, that implies that Obama's telling him to go F himself. You know, it's certain things that Dirty Harry did that just didn't sit well with me. And I got one more soundbite I'm going to play before I let you guys comment.
I was grateful for his support. And then at the same time, I'm grateful that there were others there as that knew Mitt so well that came and stepped forward. Those great Olympians that Mitt worked with.
That was Ann Romney talking about Eastwood. She was thankful that he was there, but she was more thankful for the other folks that stood up for him. I want to ask, do you think it was a big... Because Chris Christie, who, Michael, you said you like him, because he's a straight shooter, his speech is supposed to be the one that everybody gloated about, but he received so many mixed and good and bad reviews on his speech.
You don't like this dude.
Huh?
I don't like this dude. I live in Jersey, so I know this guy firsthand. And I understand he's a straight shooter, but he's a big bully, and he's trying to break all the unions in here and screw the teachers and screw the law enforcement, and he's causing a lot of problems, no solutions.
Well, that's part of the issue I'm getting here. He made a lot of comments during the speech that were controversial for even the conservatives, that it became a situation of, okay, well, Mr. Christie, was it a mistake to put you on? And a lot of people were saying, no, it wasn't, but it was a mistake to put Eastwood on. Conservatives as well as liberals were saying it was a mistake to have Eastwood be that keynote speaker to introduce Mitt Romney. Now, is he from Romney's era? Yeah. Does he relate more to Romney? Yeah. But does he relate to America now? I mean, love his acting. I'm still going to support his movie, even though I think he was kind of bad for what he did. But those are his feelings. I can't, stop liking the man's movies or his directing because of his viewpoint on that. But I want to ask you guys, what did you get from Eastwood and Christie?
From Eastwood, I thought it was very entertaining. I disagree with you. I don't think it was in poor taste. I didn't have it. The only thing that I had issue with what he said was when he dropped the code word, "This is our country." You know what I mean? That was the one that set me off. But the rest of it, I thought was pretty good. It was right in line with what his old cantankerous ass is. Oh, I'm sorry. His cantankerous self is. I'm sorry, Vic.
Say what you say, man.
I know. I'm trying to be on my best behavior for you, but he's pretty cantankerous, and I thought it was quite funny. I really did, and I didn't take issue with it as, oh my goodness, he did ass, oh my, it was terrible. No, because he at the end of the day, he's an entertainer. That's what he does.
Yeah.
That's what he do. So I accepted it as that, and also, the commentary was pretty, it was colorful, and I thought it was a little real, but the one thing that this convention, it's This convention is much, much different, and I'm looking at it much, much different. I don't know if it's because I'm getting older, I'm getting smarter, or if the fact that brother that's sitting in the White House is just making them, show themselves as the clowns they are. Because I've never looked at Clint Eastwood this way. Never. I really, kind of revered him as a little bit more of an intellect, an intellectual theologian. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I looked at him that way, but now I'm kind of looking at him like, oh my goodness. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
I'll
tell you this.
The fall from
this.
Grace.
Hold on. I'll tell you this, and I got some folks in the chat room that are going to say that they might disagree with our viewpoint, so I'm going to get the phone number out. The number is 347-637-3220. Again, the number is 347-637-3220. I want to get some folks on the line that are pro-conservative or independent or leaning in the middle, because I want to get some thoughts from other folks about what's going on. Now, I will say this. The movie Gran Turismo, where he was calling the Asian chick an artist. I mean, I'm not saying Eastwood is racist. I definitely don't think he is. I really don't think he is. But, yes, when he said, "This is our country," that did hit a note like, let me take a step back, Clint. Hold on now. What you saying?
What you saying?
Are you saying, Are you saying, you know, you're not American? Or are you saying that, you know, this is a white man's country, and you keep messing it up, you mess my credit up and stuff like that? I didn't get what he was saying on that one part. However, as I stated before, Eastwood is a guy that I like. I mean, he has a difference of opinion every so often. He didn't like Bush. And that's another thing I wanted to bring up before I got into the breakdown of the convention. Only one person from the past presidency, from the past Republican presidency, was invited to that convention. Condoleezza. Condoleezza had lipstick on her teeth while she was talking, but it's okay. She was the only one. And I didn't really realize it until I was watching Bill Maher last night. And he was like, what's the deal? It was as if they put George Bush and his whole cabinet under witness protection, other than Condoleezza, because none of them were invited. And typically, the former president, the last president of your party's administration, is invited and speaks or has some part in, you know, the convention.
Well, my thing is this. Why do you think, and to me it was obvious that they had Condoleezza there other than the other parts of the administration. Why do you think they had Condoleezza there?
Well, it's two things. I'll answer my own question, I'll answer your question. The first part is, I think Romney and Ryan want to separate themselves so much from the last Republican administration that by having President Bush or Vice President Cheney or even Rumsfeld, or any of those other clowns up there, it would have brought back the issue of y'all did this, y'all messed it up so bad that Obama got in no matter who we put up there. You know, so Condoleezza was there because, one, prominent African-American female, two, I believe she worked with Romney at some point, and three, she can give that firsthand account of, you know, what it takes to be in the White House. Now, you might have a different viewpoint on it, but that's the way I see it.
My viewpoint is this. The main reason, and I can't say it's the only reason, but the main reason she was there is because the skin color, to represent an African-American woman in the Republican Party.
Well, they kept flashing. I'll tell you what, Fox and CNN kept flashing to a lot of ethnic people in the crowd. I noticed that.
You think that is not planned?
Oh, I know, dude. I got it.
And the thing about it is this. When that's done subtly, okay, and then you question the president that's in the country, I mean in office now, of his U.S. citizenship. I mean, anybody who is in the Republican Party can't see what the heck is going on, especially if you're a person of color. You cannot see what is going on here. I mean,
Jerry,
come on.
Jerry,
huh?
I'll say this. I don't want to put it on race. But I will say this.
I understand what you're saying, but part of that is being played here, and it's
got
to be put out to light. I'm not going to back down from it. Part of this is being put out to light very subtly and through code, just like I'm saying, and people are not picking up on it.
JT, I catch what you're throwing. I was going to throw another example out there as far as when the New Mexico governor or senator was speaking. I think it was the governor. They showed a lot of, I don't want to say Native American. They look Native American to me, but a lot of people that were of Hispanic and Native American looking culture on the screen when she talked. I got it. You're trying to pander to the different cultures and show that the party is diverse. It's not just a bunch of old white guys and an old bunch of white women. I got it.
But my thing is that if they was pandering, they were half-ass pandering.
But
that's
see,
a half-ass pander, no?
But they don't have a lot of these. A lot of these conventions are geared to, you know, give everything to one group. They're geared to get their agenda out and show that we are diverse. And you will see more African American Republicans on TV and expressing their opinions now because they're getting pushed to the forefront. You don't hear Michael Steele saying nothing. Because when Michael Steele had his opportunity,
they banned his
pimps
now. They banned
him. I got it. And J.T. Watts, when he was in Oklahoma under Bush, he was put out there in the forefront. And then he made a misstep, and he slightly disappeared. My point in all that is saying that Eastwood, he made his comments. He was funny. He did his thing. A lot of people felt that it was bad and it was evil and they wanted to boycott. I'm like, no, don't boycott the man. Don't do that. He gave his honest opinion of how he felt. Now, I would feel a lot differently about it if he came out and was like, yeah, I support Barack Obama. And then if Romney gets elected, says, well, yeah, I voted for Romney. I mean, I'd rather him tell me straight up and down that he doesn't like the man, he doesn't like his politics, he doesn't like what he did for the country, and just keep it moving. I mean, I'd rather get people to give me the true sense of what's going on than their blind fake attitudes. But with that being said, I'm going to move into some things Romney said in his speech, okay? We have several topics here. We have economics and jobs, we have religion, we have military, foreign policy, small business, and a few other things, okay? So I'm going to get into this, and my source right now is yahoo.com, the Associated Press put this out on Thursday, and Yahoo grabbed it and put it on their website, okay? Economic and jobs. Romney said he will create 12 million new jobs by expanding domestic energy production, improving education and training, forging new trade agreements with other countries, balancing the budget, and helping businesses grow. A direct quote is, what America needs is jobs. Lots of jobs. Okay, and he says he will not raise taxes on the middle class. So, I want to break down these sections of Romney's speech. I want to get your thoughts on it. And I don't know if you guys watched the entire thing or not, or if you just got snippets of it, but what do you think about that portion of his plan or his proposed ideas? Because that's the one thing that I didn't get from this convention. I didn't see a plan anywhere. I just heard a lot of talking. So.
Right. I'm with you there. I thought it sounded wonderful. It sounded great. You know, but I have no faith or belief that he will follow through on any of it. And like you said, I have yet to see a concrete plan. I mean, his vice president, you know, Ryan has more of a foundation of a plan that has a lot of different parts that I just truthfully don't believe will work, nor do I think that it's anything new, because it looks and sounds like some Reaganomics rehashed all over.
Yeah.
And I mean, I listened to it, I looked at it, you know what I mean? I gave it the attention that I thought was needed. But I can't believe this guy. I take a sample from him. I can't defend that guy. I can't defend him.
Okay. All right, Jerry, what are your thoughts on this portion of his speech as far as creating the 12 million new jobs? I'll tell you guys what I think, honestly, after you guys finish.
Well, I let me put it this way. He can say whatever he wants to say. He gets into office. And what happens to a lot of these presidents? We're going to put together a fact finding committee to make this thing work. And that
right.
fact,
that fact-finding committee lasts for 4 years in their first presidency. We're still working on getting the statistics or the parameters in a fact-finding committee, and you never get anything done. So it sounds good. It's all pie in the sky. But give me some specifics. Don't just tell me we're getting a jobs program. How are you going to do that, and how are you going to pay for it?
Okay. I can see that. Here's what I'm going to say. I honestly think that he can do 12 million jobs. And I'm going to tell you why. And I've said it time and time again on my Facebook page and to anybody that will listen. As long as the President of the United States, senators, congressmen, all listen to big business, listen to the corporations, America will have jobs. Because if you do what they say, they'll create jobs. If you don't do what they say, you'll have this situation here. I believe wholeheartedly that President Obama has stuck to his guns and he hasn't flexed or bent at all about big business. And to me, it's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing because it says, look, you're the reason why we're having this problem to begin with. You know, we allowed you guys to run rampant. We allowed you guys to do this, that, and the third. It's time to rein it back in and deal with the serious issues that everybody else decided to push to the side. Everybody else said, you know what, I don't really care. Look, I'm going to slap you with this. You take it on the chin and keep it moving. He's saying, no, I'm going to put you in the timeout corner until you get your act together, and then I'm going to release you from the timeout corner, treating him like a kid. Romney, on the other hand, he has these connections that will allow certain things to take place, deregulation, which I'm going to get to in a minute, and things of that nature that will say, you know what, hey, go wild, do your thing. And there's one part that Romney mentioned that I really have a big problem with, well, two of them really, but one really bothered me, and I'm going to tell you guys about that in a minute. But I honestly think, and I'm not trying to endorse this guy at all, but I honestly think that he can make those 120 million jobs come about because he's going to let the businesses do whatever the hell it is they want to do. And it's going to cause a lot of problems with our country and different things. And this kid, he's different. He's different. Well, let me get into two things here. Well, let me do this one thing first. Energy. The United States will be independent from energy sources outside of North America by 2020, Romney said. He supports opening the Atlantic and Pacific outer continental shelves for drilling, as well as Western Land, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and offshore Alaska. He also has proposed reducing obstacles to coal, natural gas, and nuclear energy development. Okay, here's the problem. Here's one of the problems I have. You're going to open up drilling for the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It's called a refuge for a reason. You're trying to preserve life in that area. I thought that Republicans were all about conserving life and not letting you have a choice in keeping or removing a child. But you want to destroy part of a refuge so you can drill for oil. You want to deregulate certain things about coal, natural gas, and nuclear energy. Didn't he learn over the past couple of years about these deregulated coal mines in South America and other places where these folks are getting trapped in coal mines and dying?
No doubt. Right. Exactly.
Okay.
The thing is just, it's crazy to me, man. It's crazy. Go ahead.
And you know, we talked about it slightly yesterday. You want to talk about opening up the Atlantic and Pacific outer continental shelves for drilling. I talked about it yesterday. What happened when President Obama acquiesced to the Republican Party and opened up the Gulf region literally weeks or a week after he took office? the explosion and the natural disaster of what's going on down in Louisiana and the Gulf Coast.
Right.
As far as the oil spill. And Matt brought up a point. That was a BP plant. It doesn't matter if it was BP or American. It still happened.
Yeah, it still happened. Yeah.
So, you know, we could talk about offshore drilling. We could talk about this and the third. But all the Republicans jumped on President Obama like, I mean, they turned a switch. They're like, why did you let this happen? Why did you let this drilling? Drilling shouldn't be going on. But a couple of weeks prior to that, they were like, let's drill. Just like Ron.
Drill, baby, drill. And then you notice how quickly that stopped. It just stopped. It stopped for like a couple, like 2 or 3 years.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. And that's what I'm getting to as far as that. How can you and your party claim that there's such a big, big need for it and you want to do it in these areas, but condemn President Obama when he acquiesced to you guys, had the problem, and then you guys jumped down his throat because it wasn't regulated. He didn't have complete control over BP.
You know why? You know why? Because we all know why that they're saying it. You know what I mean? They're just not coming out and directly saying it. They're really talking about that pipeline from Canada that the Koch brothers that the Koch brothers done starting to make a whole lot of money, and they've invested a lot of money into, and Obama shut it down. You know, he was looking like he was leaning towards like he was going to be for it, and then he shut it down. And you know, I didn't read no more else about no more about it. You can help me out with some more info on it. I appreciate it, but I know that he had shut it down, and the Koch brothers was real pissed about it.
Well, that's because those guys have a big interest in American. They hold a big interest in what happens with that oil and how it runs through the United States because of the railroad and all that other stuff. Those guys, you know, they own pretty much a lot of America because of their interest in what they did prior to Obama's administration. I mean, they built a fortune over the years, not just over the Bush administration, but we're talking about Carter and Reagan and Bush Sr. and Clinton years. Those guys built a fortune. But JT, talk to me about it a little bit real quick.
I got nothing, man. I got nothing. You got me. I'm with McCallum. I got nothing right
okay.
now. I'm so – you got me so the N-word up that I got nothing.
I know that they were really they have been really lobbying hard for this pipeline from Canada, and there was a couple of issues that the Obama administration took offense to, and they never really addressed it, and that's why he pretty much shut it down. But information, I need more information on. I know that's pretty much in a nutshell of what happened. I haven't been up on it in about 6 months or so.
Well, I can give you a little bit, but I got to move on. But yeah, just look it up. These guys own a railroad company that runs right through and all this other stuff, and they were making buku money while it was going on. I mean, that's part of the NAFTA thing. It's also part of the, I forgot what Bill Clinton created, but it had something to do with that. But here's the other issue I really had a real problem with, and it deals with military and foreign policy, okay? Of course, you guys know why I have an issue with it. But here's what Here's what Romney stated, I'll read you a quote as well. Romney said President Barack Obama wants to make major cuts to military spending that will eliminate hundreds of thousands of jobs, put U.S. security at greater risk. Romney said he would preserve a military that is so strong, no nation would ever dare to test it. Romney credited Obama for giving SEAL Team 6 the order to take out Osama bin Laden, but he criticized the president for failing to slow Iran's nuclear threat and for abandoning key allies, Israel and Poland. Obama has been too easy on Russian President Vladimir Putin, he said. Under my administration, our friends will see more loyalty, and Mr. Putin will see a little less flexibility and more backbone. And that's a direct quote from Mitt Romney. Here's the problem I have. We already know that we're in
Hey, Vic. I'm hearing a lot of feedback in the background. Sound like a TV.
It's not me. That must be JT. It's not me.
Go ahead. Go ahead, bro. All
right. Here's the problem I have here. We already know that after wars are done, military normally shrinks. Okay?
Exactly.
And part of this is, and this is what the Sergeant Major of the Army is putting out, not just President Obama. I know he gets his direction from President Obama along with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, blah, 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 blah. But the move is to get rid of a lot of weak non-commissioned officers and weak soldiers and start paying them entitlements. Remember, yesterday I brought up the fact that the military is part of that 1% as well as getting entitlements. Getting rid of these underperforming troops that are just in it because they have a job. And keeping the ones that are actually doing what they need to do to protect the country. What does that mean? If you're getting a substandard review as a non-commissioned officer, which is an NCO, a sergeant, or above, then they're saying you're not doing your job. It's time to fire you. It's time to let you go. If you're sick or if you're injured, such as I am, I'm injured, but I'm able to do a lot more things than I'm supposed to do. They're like, okay, well, what is the need for you in the military? You can't deploy. You can't do this. So they're getting rid of those folks. I might be on the chopping block, honestly, but I'm doing a lot of different things to prevent that. So the budgetary thing is, if you're not in a war, you need to cut down your troops, save money, because it costs a lot of money to take care of troops and their families. And they're letting folks go that have tattoos above their neck and stuff like that. It's either remove them or you're getting removed. The bigger part of the situation I have a problem with what Ron is putting out there is Putin. I thought his buddy or his mentor, Ronald Reagan, healed that wound between Russia and America. I thought he did that. Why in the hell do you want to start a beef with Russia, the USSR, whatever they want to be called now, and we still haven't dealt with China? We still haven't dealt with Korea, South Korea.
Economics.
You know, I got it. But who funds those different places we have issues with? Russia. They get the nuclear weapons to Korea, South Korea, whatever, to all these other places, and Iran, and you want to pick a fight with them. So you're going to have four nations coming at us, one of which is bigger than ours, okay? They've been training. Even though the Cold War has been over, they've been training to fight us. We've been training to fight other folks. So you want to say that the president's been weak on Putin, and you're going to be strong on Putin. So when you're supposed to have these meetings with Putin, and, you know, everybody sees that Putin and Obama aren't exactly eye to eye when they have these meetings. You know, they are the most uncomfortable meetings that they have. So you're telling me that he hasn't been strong on them. Now, Iran, here's the deal. We can't police Iran by ourselves. It takes the United Nations. So if you want to say that, at which we are like one-third of the founding party of NATO and all the other stuff, if you want to say that we've been soft on Iran on their advancement of nuclear weapons, how about the rest of the world? You know, we can sanction them all we want. We can do whatever it is we want as far as the American policy goes. But the world has to come down on them, not just us. This isn't, oh, we don't like Saddam Hussein. We're going to lie to the United Nations and go in and then find out, oh, there were never no weapons of mass destruction. Okay. All right, why do you think Colin Powell left? Because he was used as a pawn. And that's why a lot of Republicans don't like him no more, because he decided to tell the truth and step away. He's still a Republican, though. He still has those beliefs. But, I mean, it sounds like...
And he wasn't there at that orange, too. That was real suspicious.
Well, hey, it is what it is, you know. None of those folks were invited except Condoleezza. But my point is, you don't want to pick a fight with Russia right now when you got all these other places that you got to deal with. I mean, Romney, he might talk a good game, but he's not the one that's going to be out there shooting them bullets. He's not the one that's going to be out there on the front line. These are the type of people that cause wars. And is that how he plans to stimulate the economy? By going to a war, hiring more people to go to war, losing more lives, and the textile industry gets more involved? Got it. I understand how you bolster the economy during the war.
Well, let me ask you something. The majority of people that are in the service, what economic class are they?
As far as what level, it depends on the level, dude. Because your officers,
for the everyday fighting man, what in the economic class?
Oh, they're mid to low. Not even really mid. But as you move up, like I have, you become solid middle class.
I understand what you're saying, but for the average middle soldier, okay,
mm-hmm.
middle
yeah,
class,
lower
whatever,
income.
lower income, and even middle class, why would that make a difference to someone that is several economic classes away from that, and their sons or daughters are several economic classes away from that, and for the most part wouldn't have to worry about going into the service and having them put in harm's way.
Well, I'll
tell you. So they basically can't relate. So it's just a matter of doing whatever they want to do, such as the prior administration before Barack Obama, where he just went willy nilly, didn't care what anyone had to say. And just went and did whatever he wanted to do, and it caused thousands of lives, and in my opinion, unnecessarily.
Well,
because he had to try to over a lie for one, and the fact is he wanted to avenge his daddy for another.
Well, Jerry, I'll put it this way: you've served, and you served on the officer side.
Mm-hmm.
And you served, I believe, under Reagan and Bush Sr., if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So you saw what that was like from that end.
Mm-hmm.
Under Bush Obama, it's kind of different. I'll say that I believe the foothold was made in Iraq. For whatever reason why, we were told we were going... The world knows, most Americans know, that it was not truthful.
It was a lie. Plain and
okay.
simple. I'll say it. It was a lie. You don't have, to say it. It was a lie. Plain and
okay.
simple.
However, it allowed America a foothold into the Middle East that they had never had before. And Romney talks about President Obama not supporting its allies, Israel and Poland. Honestly, if you look at the whole thing, are we supposed to take a side for right or wrong? Or are we supposed to take a side for a friend that's been our friend forever? Okay, got it. All my friends, and we just had a situation earlier this week, Jerry, where one of my best friends for like over 20 years did something that disappointed me and upset. I still love the guy.
Yeah.
I still love him. He's still
going
to be my friend, but I'm going to call him out on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's all President Obama did. He called out Israel on something. Okay? Israel didn't like that because the former president never did it. He didn't say we're just going to stop being a friend. He just said, look, man, let's be truthful about this. You don't, and I said this yesterday on No Chaser, you don't go to another country and say, okay, well, I support the president and his ways, but then back home, say the president's done a terrible job, and he's done, I mean, that's double talking. That's saying you're pandering to your audience. You're trying to make yourself look good to your people in the United States, and you're trying to make yourself look good to the folks overseas.
That's exactly what I've been saying about this guy. He's a chameleon. And you can't trust a person that is a chameleon, because what do they stand for? You don't know, because they're all over the place. You don't have no clue what they stand for, because they don't stand for anything. They stand for whatever is popular, whatever the situation dictates. You can't depend on or put your faith in somebody like that, because if you turn your back, you may be the one that he goes against. You follow me? So you can't trust a person like that.
Well, I agree, and I want to move on. We only got 2 minutes left of live there. We're probably going to overtime. I got it, but you're absolutely right on that. And I understand you're trying to go after the main source of issues in Russia, but right now, you need to deal with, if you're going to be president, as you want to be, you need to deal with Iran, who Ahmadinejad, they just went through a terrible earthquake, killing a lot of people, but we're not supporting them because we got a blockade against them, right? So they're saying, well, America's not humane because they're not supporting us. Got it. Whatever. You got to deal with Kim Jong-il's son, who hasn't done anything wrong, doesn't look like he's going to do anything wrong, but because they still have nuclear weapons and have said blatantly, we're willing to shoot them against you, you got to deal with that. Don't go pick a fight with the Soviet Union and its brotherly states or its brotherly nations. Don't do that. You don't have enough manpower for that unless you wanted to have a nuclear war. That's not going to happen. I don't want that to happen. All right, I got to move on. We'll talk about two more subjects, actually four, but I'm going to combine two. Small business and women. Romney said he would be a champion of small businesses, which he described as America's engine of job growth. Taxes on businesses would be cut, not increased, under Romney administration, he said. He would also repeal President Barack Obama's health care law in order to rein in the skyrocketing costs of health care. Michael, we can talk about that part as far as Romney care in Massachusetts. Romney made a direct appeal to his critical demographic, which are women, by noting that women held important positions during his term as Massachusetts governor. He listed several of the women, including former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, who addressed the Republican National Convention. And he also mentioned his mother, Lenore Romney, who had once run for the U.S. Senate. So let's talk about those two issues briefly, if you can. Small business, Mike, and he's talking about repealing health care. And again, like I said yesterday, isn't that what all conservatives have been saying they want done for the past umpteen decades? They're tired of paying for everybody's health care. Why repeal it? Because of the taxes? Even the United States Supreme Court Justice, who was the swing vote, who was conservative, said it's right to tax this type of thing on it. It's American, so it goes by. Tell me your thoughts. Why is he trying to repeal it when he does it or he did it for Massachusetts and it worked?
I've got no idea why he's trying to repeal it, because as a businessman, and looking at America in its totality, or even when he was looking at the state in its totality, he understood that we had to get a hold of this healthcare situation. We had to, you know what I'm saying? We have to do it, you know. And for them to talk about they don't want to pay for someone else's healthcare or whatever, you're paying for it anyway.
Yes.
We're paying for it anyway.
Yep.
You know, we've been doing it for years and years and years. Why not do it all together? That's all we're saying. That's all we're doing. And Romney understood the power of it. You know, so that's why I have it's boggling my mind why he wants to build this thing and why he's so against it now. I just, it just really gets under my skin because, you know, I'm a businessman as well. You know, if he would stand up for that Romney kid, this would be a whole different election. This would be a whole different race because I would be really confused.
He can't.
Because that's not what his party wants.
No, he can't.
Because he's going against the party line and the chameleon, and that's who I call him now, the chameleon, is pandering to the party line in order to get elected.
Exactly.
I saw this, and I saw it, and this is on film, that Mitch McConnell said in November 4th of 2010, the number one priority is denied President Obama a second term. And that was November 4th of 2010. So,
right. It wasn't jobs. He didn't say jobs. He didn't say health care. He didn't say women's rights. He didn't say any. He didn't say gay rights. He said electing and making sure Barack Obama is not elected for a second term. That was his main concern.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And that is on film. November 4th, 2010, he made that statement.
And well, you know what? The party has done a good job of sticking to that. Even though Barack Obama and most liberals, because not all of them, a lot of them want to bend and you know keep their ties or whatever. They fought uphill the entire 4 years. They fought uphill. And sometimes going against their own party mates. And, you know, sometimes you got to do that because when you look at when you look at what needs to be done, it's not going to be friendly for everybody. That's the one thing a lot of folks fail to realize, that change doesn't always mean it's going to be sweet and soft. A lot of times change means you're going to have to deal with hard times. And like Matt even said this yesterday. He said, and I got a promo of the shows, but Matt even said it yesterday. The one thing he liked about President Obama is he made him have to bootstrap. Okay? Bootstrap. For those who don't understand that term, it means get to the grindstone, sacrifice, be an individual, and be a self-starter. Don't wait for somebody to give you something. Create it on your own. And that's a good thing for American people. Also, not to mention that when you bootstrap, you have more pride in what you do and how you do it. But too many people are relying on, well, I got a buddy, and I've got this, and I've made this party line, and I've done this, that, and the third, and I need this favor return, so I got to vote for this, that, and the third. They don't get it. They don't get it. America was built on people bootstrapping, and that's all this guy's been doing. He's been trying to show America, look, we got so many problems, it's time to tighten up. Maybe you need to eat some ramen noodle. Get some of these fat kids out of the school. Y'all want to get rid of PE in school? Fine. Change your health eating habits. You know, you can't have it both ways. But look, we got 2 minutes left of live there, so what I'm going to do is promo the other shows, and then I'm going to get back to this topic. Every Saturday, Blog Talk Radio has this one show. It's called Fantasy Sports and Politics. It comes on 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Saturday. Next Saturday, I will not be hosting. Jerry will be hosting. So the ratings
it's gonna be a better
up.
Show.
I don't know. Whatever. And Jerry's going to talk about week one of the NFL games. He's going to rehash the Thursday night game or the Wednesday night game because the Democratic National Convention is happening Thursday night. So I know the game's Wednesday. And President Obama has this thing going on. Also on Sunday, he has No Chaser. He has the Master Plan.
Right.
The Master Plan, and I believe he's going to preview all the games and some fantasy players.
Absolutely.
That you might want to try to get at the last second before kickoff.
Absolutely.
Then on Tuesday, we have Capacity Bikini with Kim Fun. She does a great job of giving you a different point of view. She's not contentious. She's not like us. She's more meek and mellow.
a nice type of fellow. No, she's not a fellow. She's a nice lady. And then on Wednesdays, my cousin has Grown Soul and Real Talk here on Blog Talk Radio, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, p.m., and they do all types of crazy stuff about relationships and life. Then on Thursdays, you have FSP Crew Show, Jeff, Jerry, and Black go into it, and I believe they're going to have their first Thursday night game to discuss.
Yes.
They're going to have a Thursday night game. Mm-hmm. And then on Fridays, you have No Chaser with Mac Williams and Jerry Taylor, where you're going to get all types of stuff. I done got Mac talking politics, but he said he's not going to do it no more, so we'll see what he does. We'll talk about it. We're going to overtime right now. All right. Let's keep it moving on. The last few topics that I want to get to that Mommy addressed were business experience and religion. Now, he does have the edge for President Obama in business experience. I will admit that. But again, like you said on yesterday's show, running several businesses is not the same as running a world economy.
Yes.
Being the president of the United States.
Yes.
And I can get more into that as we go on, but let me read this stuff. Romney stressed that his business background in Bain Capital, a private equity firm he helped start in 1984, makes him better qualified than Obama to turn around a struggling American economy. Among the successful companies Bain helped start, Romney said, are Staples, the Sports Authority, and Steel Dynamics, a steel mill in Indiana. On religion, Romney tied his Mormon faith to the American experience. His family found community and kinship with remarkably vibrant and diverse congregations that prayed together and were quick to help each other out. He said that growing up Mormon in Michigan may have seemed out of place, but his friends cared more about the teams or the sports teams they followed than what church he and his family went to. Now I'm going to make my thoughts on those two things and let you guys go at it. Firstly, on the religion part, I understand in Michigan growing up they didn't care, but as the president of the United States, apparently they care a whole bunch about your religion because they've been killing President Barack Obama about whether he's a Muslim or if he's Christian. So, Mormon, they've been around, what, only 200 years, 300 years, something like that? And then, what, 70 years ago, they finally said it's okay to have black people? Black people aren't all going to hell? Okay. Thanks for that, Mormon guy. I'm a strong believer in your religious beliefs have a strong dictation on how you make your decisions. As the President of the United States, you can't let your personal religious beliefs dictate all of your policy. What I mean by that is this. Every person in the United States is not Christian. He's a representative of that. He's a Mormon. You don't have the same values or beliefs as most people. So for you to say policy is we're going to say, no, you can't have an abortion, or no, you can have more than one wife, that doesn't jive right to all Americans. You know? So when you make policy based on religion, which he does and a lot of the conservative party does, you're telling America you're going to take this and like it because I'm in charge. I don't agree with that. As far as the business experience goes, Bain Capital is a very powerful firm. Romney has done some great things with it. I give my hat off to him, but he's done a lot of it out of country. He can bring a lot of that out-of-country experience into the country. And I'm referring to a movie that's out right now. It's called The Campaign. I know it's a satire. I know it's a comedy with Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis. But a scene in there when Dan Aykroyd and John Lithgow go to China, and they bring a Chinese. Their plan is to back a candidate so they can put a Chinese sweatshop into North Carolina so that everything is cheaper and they'll deregulate and say you don't have to do all this other stuff. That's what Bain Capital does. I mean, I'm being honest. You can look it up. What they do is they take these small, rundown firms, turn them into big, lucrative firms by allowing certain things to take place that normally would not happen with regulated guidelines. That's how he generates money. Not all of his firms are like that. Don't get me wrong. Not all of them are like that. But a lot of them are. So when you bring in those jobs and you say, well, you know what? We're not going to have a union. So you can have this job. You need a job. I need to be a job, but you're not going to join a union. You're going to do what I tell you to do. And we're not going to give you the breaks that you normally get. We're not going to give you the type of compensation you're supposed to get. Fine. But that's free enterprise. Unions are bad for free enterprise. That's what he's going to do. I don't agree with it. I don't agree with a lot of unions. But, hey.
Unions built the United States.
I got you, Jerry.
Unions built the United States, and if it wasn't for unions and the protection of unions, a lot of abuse of employees, health-wise and physically, would still be going on.
I agree.
No doubt.
And that's why I think they're important. I don't agree with a lot of them because I got a buddy right now who's a plumber, part of a union. But he can't get work. He hasn't been able to get plumbing work for almost a year and a half now, 2 years. And I've told him, step away from the union and go work for one of these plumbing companies like a private business. Because you might not have the protection or the guarantee of a union, but you'll have a job. And people, like, he can be a plumber for, let's say, I'm just using an example, Jerry. For Jerry plumbers and sex offenders, you know, and the Great Indoors, who one of their specialties, or Lowe's for that example, is plumbing. You might have a contract with them to go put in somebody's plumbing. You know, and nowadays a lot of people aren't buying a lot of things, but plumbing is something that they are getting because they need to keep the house up, and you can get that job. And he's like, well, you know. I'm on the list. I'm high on the list, and then I got to go up there every Thursday or whatever day it is and sign in and da 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 da.
The list ain't paying the bills.
Huh?
The list is not paying the bills.
Correct. Exactly. But if he steps out of that union and goes and gets that job, he's gonna have a hard time getting back in that union. That's why I don't like it, because my buddy. Who I know is smart as I don't know what, and he wanted to be a plumber. Be a plumber. Do your thing. But the union has him wrapped, and I don't want to say afraid to leave, but it seems like that, because if he goes and works at a regular company or whatever to be a plumber, he loses out on those benefits and all those things. That's what I don't like about the union. However, as you said, without the union, a lot of these guys wouldn't be protected or have the insurance or anything, you know, that they really need to survive in their family. But that's when business is going good, bro.
And the problem right now is that a lot of companies are taking advantage of people because of the economy, what it is, and people are so afraid of losing their jobs that they're willing to compromise themselves to keep that job. And I fully understand that because at the bottom line is you got to feed the mouths that are at the table looking for food, looking for you to take care of them. And you, for all intents and purposes, do what you got to do to make ends meet. It's a sad state of affairs when, like we were talking about yesterday, when hardworking people are carrying two jobs, maybe a husband and wife, if there is a husband and wife in the household, are carrying a job each, and maybe one of the other ones is carrying two jobs, and still not being able to make ends meet, and are in that food line or in that Medicaid line. Welfare line looking for help because they still can't make ends meet with their two incomes, like Mikhail was talking about last night.
Yeah.
Well, and that's part of it, you know. and my buddy's doing what he got to do to make it. But
sure you do.
I'm telling the dude, you know, he's doing security at a high school right now, and that's seasonal because once school's over, not a paycheck. I mean, it's 9 months out of the year, you know, which is good. He's paying his bills, but it's not what he was trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? He went to school and he put in a lot of time, a lot of hours, and money to be a plumber.
Well,
you know,
the only other recourse I can see him doing is striking out on his own, leaving the union for that fact to be an independent owner of his own plumbing company, and then
doesn't he have to do like an apprenticeship first? He already did that. That's what I'm saying.
He's a full-fledged plumber. That's what I'm saying, Mikal.
You're right. He need to do it himself.
Right.
And I've suggested that to him. But one, he can't get the capital because he bought a house from somebody and the house is falling apart. And it's just some things that he would need partners. He would need partners to help him.
Okay. All right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
I mean, that's the best thing for him. Get his own van. Get the Jerry Taylor mystery machine. Put the stuff on it. And strike out on his own. That would be what a Republican or Mitt Romney would say to do. But,
yeah.
But there's so much risk in that. And I was trying to point that out to Matt, that 1 in 30 risk takers they make it. You have a 29,
right.
They got to file for bankruptcy. They got to, the people that work for them, they got to find a job.
Right.
They all got to go on public assistance because it didn't pan out for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got to step out there. You have to step out there. But you got to have a calculated risk. Not just be a risk taker, be a calculated risk taker.
Right, right.
So it is what it is. But anyway, guys, I really wanted to get into the Democratic National Convention, but I didn't get into it, and we're in overtime, and I want to jump on a brand-new subject like that without exposing our listeners to it. I can't wait to see what goes on with it. I know a lot of folks are mad at President Obama for 2 years in a row interrupting their football on Thursday, but they're getting it on Wednesday. So we'll see what happens there. Any predictions for this before we go off air?
A lot of what you see in the Republican National Committee, you're going to see the opposite quite naturally in the Democratic National Committee. I don't know if anything that they said is going to be addressed. I imagine that President Obama, when he has his acceptance speech, will try to counteract what was said at the Republican National Committee, and especially Mitt Romney. So this is the climate where once this committee is over and done with, the convention is over and done with, then the boxing gloves are put on, they're put into the ring, and here we go. So.
Right. I don't think that there'll be that much difference in the DNC. The only difference will be Obama. I have no faith in any of them other ones in there. You know, if Hillary was in the game, yeah, okay, yeah. You know, but no. It's just
going to be
Obama show feeds up.
What's that, Vic?
I say Hillary isn't going to be running with him this term if he's elected, so he's going to have to find a new Secretary of State.
Yeah, you know what? She deserves a rest, man. She been putting in work.
Yeah,
that woman has been putting in work. She deserves a rest. You know, she deserves a rest, and then you know, rest, and then make up her mind if she want to run in 2016.
Let me tell you something, man. I gotta hand it to this administration, present administration, because they've been putting out fires and building bridges that were torn down when the prior administration was in office because of the bullheadedness and stubbornness and bulliness of the prior administration. So, yes, you're right. Hillary's been working overtime trying to do a lot to build those bridges back because of what happened in the past.
Yeah. Anytime you see the Secretary of State going to China with the Secretary of Treasury over there having a big meet, you know it's something up.
China wants their money back. They're like,
want their money back.
But anyway,
I think they money back from all them bootleg CDs they got. You know, I ain't gonna mess the show up. Them, go ahead.
All right. So basically, I want to say that I think the DNC is gonna be a lot of. Well, they said this, but here's what we're saying. I hope, I can't wait to see what President Obama is going to say in reference to his plan to fix the issues that are here and take ownership of certain things, good and bad. But the one thing that I look forward to is the debates.
Yes, absolutely.
Really want to see the debates. So once this convention is over, show me the debates so I can see how these people are going to react and how they're going to talk. I mean, they talked about President Clinton, Obama reading off of a teleprompter. Man, Paul Ryan was straight reading off of his, and you could tell he was reading. But it is what it is. I can't wait to see that.
And Romney will have, like, I don't see him having any chance with Obama. I don't understand these people keep saying that Obama is not a good debater, Slim. I don't get it.
Well, it's people that are going to say that because they don't like him and they don't like what he stands for. 50-10, Notre Dame beat Navy. 50-10. Wow.
Okay. Okay.
But anyway, I honestly think it's going to happen like this. I think Ryan's going to beat Biden. Because I think Joe's going to just go off on his ass. He's like, look at here, kid. I don't tell you, man, but I've been doing this for years. I think that's what Biden's going to do, because Biden's just a loose cannon. I think that Obama is going to destroy Romney, because Romney has too many positions that he's taken back and forth. You know, and that's going to kill him. That's going to kill him in my eyes. It might not kill him in other people's eyes. Some people might say, well, he's flexible.
Yeah.
You know, because he decided this was best for us, and then he changed his mind. And he's like, well, okay, all right.
He's just notorious for saying some of the stupidest stuff.
Well, it is what it is. That's what I'm looking forward to.
I can't imagine what kind of gaffe he's going to say. I mean, when that Bama offered to bet the Texas governor $10,000, the gentleman's bet, I was like, what is he doing?
Straight up and down. Hey, matter of fact, none of the former Republican candidates were at the convention.
You
sure?
Know
that, right?
Gingrich was.
Okay, Newt. Yeah, Newt was there, but Newt was the only one. The rest of them weren't invited, and nor did they show up. That was it. That's crazy, man. At least, you know, Santorum, who said he was going to lobby for him, would at least show up. At least I would think so. He was the last candidate. And, you know, McCain, you don't want McCain up there. You got that brother talking about, yeah.
McCain was up there.
Not that McCain. I'm talking about the black McCain.
Oh, you talking about Herman Cain.
Yeah, Herman Cain. Not McCain. I'm sorry. Cain, yeah. That dude. I was just like, oh. Barack, you won already. They let this dude talk. Anyway.
Oh, I know. The funniest thing, I was watching Cat Williams last night. I didn't watch this show,
Herman came up.
One thing he said is, yo, we didn't know about him. White people, we did not know about Herman Cain. We did not.
Yeah.
We didn't clear him. We didn't clear him. We didn't clear him.
Yeah. I saw that stand up. I thought he was kind of off, honestly. But it is what it is.
He was more than off. He was a little tight, we'll say. But it was still funny. All
right. So,
With that being said, JT ATM Money, I need you to do me a favor, bro.
No problem. It is what it is. Tomorrow, 10 a.m., Master Plan. Excuse me. Tomorrow, 12 p.m., Master Plan. Special two-hour draft show. We'll be drafting the second hour of that two-hour show. The first part of it, the rehash of what we talked about in the different skill positions in fantasy football. Tune in. It's going to be a lot of fun. Vic and I will definitely be on air. And anyone else that's going to be jumping in. With that being said, from Macau, from Mr. Gardner, and from myself, as always, you've been listening to
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little fuse, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree.